This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Dorothy Barnett, the Executive Director, and Rachel Misivi, Assistant Director of Climate and Energy Project, join our host, Richard Mabian. But first, I'm Naturally with your headline news. KCUR.org reports, the Leavenworth County Commission on Monday morning backed off its support for a controversial chicken processing plant, throwing the future of the massive project into doubt. The commission voted 2-1 to formally rescind a resolution that would have paved the way for $500 million in bonds to be issued for construction of the Tyson Foods plant near the Leavenworth County town of more than 5,000. The shift comes after a heated town hall meeting hosted Friday by several Kansas lawmakers in Tonganoxie that drew more than 2,000 people. E360.yale.edu reports, Drax Power Station in eastern England for four decades has been one of the world's largest coal power plants, often generating a tenth of the UK's electricity. And yet, almost overnight, burning coal is being banished in Britain. When Drax opened for business in 1974, Britain got 80% of its electricity from burning coal. As recently as 5 years ago, that figure was 40%. But last year, it was 9%. And this summer, coal supplied less than 2% of Britain's electricity. On April 21st, 2017, for the first time since its inception, the British power grid went 24 hours without coal. The zing in the power line now comes almost entirely from natural gas, nuclear, and growing networks of giant wind turbines and solar farms. The government says all of the UK's remaining coal plants will be shut down by 2025, maybe sooner. Drax will live on, but only by burning biomass, mostly wood chips, imported from the southern United States. DemocracyNow.org reports, in Texas, authorities say Hurricane Harvey is responsible for causing nearly a 500,000 gallons of gasoline to spill from two storage tanks, marking the largest spill so far from the devastating storm. The 460,000 gallons were released from a petroleum tank farm operated by Magellan Midstream Partners in Galena Park, Texas, just east of Houston. Some of the spilled gasoline contaminated a waterway alongside the Houston Ship Channel. Hurricane Harvey killed 70 people and caused widespread environmental contamination. The Center for Biological Diversity reports flooded oil refineries and chemical plants released as much as 5 million pounds of pollutants into the air during the storm. LawrenceJournalWorld.com reports, even with the pumping system for collecting nitrogen-contaminated water at the former farmland fertilizer plant temporarily shut off, the city will still have 10 million gallons of excess water to get rid of. Distributing that quantity of water, enough to fill 15 Olympic-sized swimming pools, is a major operation. The city of Lawrence took ownership of the former farmland industry's fertilizer plant in 2010 with the plan of using part of the 467-acre site for its new business park. The city paid nothing for the property and received an $8.6 million trust fund to pay for the cleanup. The city also accepted full responsibility via a contract with the Kansas Department of Health and Environment for remediating decades of nitrogen fertilizer spills that contaminated the groundwater. Nitrate, a compound found in fertilizer, often contaminates drinking water in agricultural areas, and infants who drink water too high in nitrates can become seriously ill and even die, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. For sites with contaminated groundwater, remediation is primarily concerned with ensuring domestic and public water supplies for drinking water are not contaminated, according to the KDHE. That's all I have for the news. I'm going to let Mike say something.
All right, and we're just going to switch over the mic and bring in Mr. Richard Mabian.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Naturally. Hello, everyone. As always, it's a pleasure to be here, and I think we have a really great show for you tonight. I got a couple of people here who I really like a lot and spend some time with, and I think that you all will have a chance to hear them talk about a event they have going on. Before I go there, though, I want to repeat something that Naturally said, and that was 70 people died due to that Harvey. That's a lot. You know, that's a lot. And as much as I've heard comments being made as far as what the government should have been doing and what the government didn't do and all that kind of stuff, I really haven't heard that much attention being given to those 70 people dying. And you know, and that, and when she said that, you know, y'all know I'm very much on top and attuned to all this kind of stuff. And it dawned on me that I really hadn't heard that. If I had heard it before, it just went by without me really paying that much attention. And that scares me because that means that we're starting to adjust to tragedies. And that's a bad thing, people. When it gets to the point that we just take it in stride, you know, it's kind of like another drive-by shooting with a young child getting killed. Just another one. And we have to make sure, you know how I am, so you might as well get ready for it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make sure that anytime I'm on this air and there's things like that happening and we need to talk about it, I deplore the fact that we had people in a rest home in Florida that across the street from a hospital that died. It's totally inhumane. But we spend a lot of time attacking one another over issues and policies and opinions, but we have human beings that are suffering in this country. So as I always say, I want you to do what you can to always pay attention and always be willing to extend a hand to someone that's less fortunate than yourself. Okay, that's enough. I'm not going to get up on that soapbox tonight. I'm going to leave it alone. The weather's been halfway decent. It's been hot. It's been very hot. And mosquitoes. Watch out for mosquitoes. Those mosquitoes from both Florida and Houston will probably end up here. But that is going to be an issue, so we always need to be aware of it. Now, that's all I have for you this evening. I got a couple of people who I spend a lot of time with, like I said, and Dorothy's been here before, and I don't think Rachel's been on the air before, so this is a first time for here. So, Dorothy, I'll let you start. Introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about what you do, and then we'll get Rachel on here.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here back to Eco Radio again. We always have a great time when we're here with you, so thank you. So I'm Dorothy Barnett. I direct a nonprofit based here in Kansas, the Climate and Energy Project. We're a 10-year-old organization.
That's right. Got an anniversary coming up.
We do. October 27th. We're going to ring in 10 more years. We are advocates for clean and renewable energy, energy efficiency. We really focus on positive solutions, Richard. We're trying to figure out how to move clean energy forward for the health of people, for the economic prosperity of people, and really try to figure out how to bring a different conversation to our state and to our region. So with that, our work falls in a couple of buckets. One of those is our renewable energy efficiency. One of the things I'm going to talk to you about tonight is our new Clean Energy Business Council and our partnership with the Kansas Department of Commerce to host, it's actually the 18th annual Kansas Energy Conference. So I'm excited to talk to you a little bit about that.
Okay.
But on the phone, we have our new assistant director. Rachel has been with the Climate and Energy Project for 5 years. Rachel Mislivy, coming back as assistant director recently, and we're thrilled to have her back on board. And she really is managing our health equity work, Richard. You know, our climate work, our partnership with you, with NAACP and others. We call that wealth, water, energy, air, land, transportation, and health. And so I think if it's okay with you, we'll start out a little bit with Rachel.
Yeah, I'm wanting to do Rachel. Welcome to the show. And I'm really excited about you being on here. I've been waiting for this to get you on the air so people can hear you. I wrapped up to those that are listening. Rachel's a very, very sharp person that really knows this environmental and her role very well. So, Rachel, would you introduce yourself and tell them a little bit about getting a little bit of your background of how you ended up being where you are, and then come on, tell us about it.
Great. Thanks, Richard, for having me on the show. I've listened to Eco Radio a lot over the years, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today. So thank you. Just a real quick background about me. As Dorothy said, I've been with the Climate and Energy Project for 5 years. Before that, I worked in education and research, really, and always was volunteering and doing stuff in my spare time on environmental issues. And finally, when the opportunity came open with the Climate and Energy Project, I was able to align my passions with my pocketbook, and I've been thrilled to be doing the work with the EP for all this time.
Okay.
Well,
I would ask you more questions about you and that farm that you live on and stuff, but I'm going to have you go ahead and start telling us about wealth. Explain to everyone what that's about.
Sure. So the Wealth Project is part of a grant. It is a grant-funded project. It was an opportunity by the Kansas Health Foundation to try to increase the network of stakeholders that were working to address health equity across the state. And so the Climate and Energy Project is one of 10 organizations that are participating in this cohort. 10 organizations were funded to do this work. And the grant provides resources that will help kind of grow the capacity of the organization so we can be better at doing the work that we're doing, but also so we can obviously improve our ability to integrate health equity into our work. And so the Climate and Energy Project, we really believe that we're stronger together, and the better connected we are to each other, the more resilient our communities will be. And to be true to that goal of ours, we brought together some key partners of ours who are doing good work in our state, including the Kansas Rural Center, the NAACP, Kansas City, which, Richard, you've been a great partner with us on this, Grassland Heritage Foundation, the Kansas Natural Resources Council, and Kansas Interfaith Action. And we're also just in a couple of months here, we'll be bringing on the Kansas Association for Conservation and Environmental Education. And these groups are all going to, well, we have been coming together for the past year, focusing on the environmental health of economically disadvantaged communities and really the ways that health equity impacts our current work.
Okay. You know, this is either one of you, and I'm saying this to folks. First of all, let me get the number out here. If anyone is sitting out there and you'd like to call in because you hear something that strikes your attention or you hear something that you'd like to know about, just feel free to call. The number here is 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. What I'd like for you, one or two of you, either one of you, to do is explain what it is that your organization does. And I'm going to set it up for you. So, you know, those are the people that she's talking about that we are working in collaboration with them. We're all hands-on folks. We all do stuff, you know, in the various areas that we come from. A Friday, I was out teaching high school seniors how to scientifically test water. And so that's just an example of the caliber of folks that we have that's associated with this wealth program. But now my interpretation of what it is they are teaching us the concept and knowledge of health, how health and climate change affects the work that we do. Now I'll let them take it from there to kind of give it their opinion. I just gave you mine. You know, I'm just a old boots on the ground kind of person. So what would you two say?
Rachel, do you want to take that?
Yeah, sure. So, and thanks for that great question, Richard. So as Richard mentioned, most of or all of the organizations involved in the Wealth Project have expertise in very, very different environmental areas. So although our work is interconnected and we focus on specific climate risks related to our own like individual organizational expertise, we don't often talk about health equity in that framework. So environmentally, our environmental focuses, for example, for the Climate and Energy Project, which we often refer to ourselves as CEP, so that's interchangeable, we focus on renewable energy. The Kansas Rural Center, they focus more on agriculture and food, Grassland Heritage Foundation, they talk about prairie and native ecosystems. And so we're trying to take all of our specialties independently and look at them through this lens of health equity. And so as Richard knows, for the past year we've been each individual organization, the representative of that organization, has led what we're calling an exploration, which is basically, you know, here's my specialty, my expertise, and what our organization does, and this is what it looks like if you overlay this health equity lens. And I think kind of the beauty of this project up to this point, for sure, is in that notion of exploring and trying to understand better. I think sometimes the hardest thing about leadership or trying to make change is just to say, I don't know the answers, can you help me? And this project is a really great example of us saying, we know a lot about clean energy and energy efficiency and climate change, but we don't really know about health equity in relation to those. So let's all try to move each other and expand our knowledge quicker so we can start making changes faster and more effectively.
Yeah, I have to admit, because like I said, I'm a boots on the ground person. There's just not a lot of places out here that are helping people learn. You have to do it yourself. I mean, and if you are not the kind of self-starter or take the initiative to find books and keep digging into your specialty, you know, you can become stagnated. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think a lot of places, a lot of programs, since if we go back to 2006 to now, have become stagnated. And it's just, it's a job. And that, and I know for me, for a fact, and I'm sure the others that are with me, when I come to those sessions that you all have, when I leave there like I've been to school, you know. I mean, all the way back to Kansas City, you know, my mind is just functioning on what we've been talking about. And it has a lot to do with developing your perspective and your philosophical point of view. Dorothy, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say that one of the things that we've been really, I think, lucky is that we've had such great partners and really, you know, have learned from each other.
Right.
You know, as Rachel said, we really have focused on, you know, for 10 years, normalizing, if you will, renewable energy. You know, helping people understand that there are good things for our economies, for our communities, and really starting to recognize that there are amazing things for our health if we can really transition to a clean air and clean energy. And so I'm excited to be learning along with our peers and, you know, hoping to share information with communities. Rachel may want to talk a little bit more about one of the community dialogues that we're starting to have throughout, you know, the area to really see what people want to talk about when it comes to this idea of health equity and climate resilience. Those are important things, and we've got to figure it out together. So I'm really excited about this part of our work.
Yes. It definitely adds a different different meaning to what we're doing, and like I said, we just don't have a lot of that going on out here. And you both of you know what I'm talking about. There's just not a lot of places. Rachel, I tell you what, I'm gonna hold off. We're gonna take a break, and then I'll come back from the break, and we'll pick up back from you, and then we'll slip into the second part of the show. Okay, be right back with you.
Chicago is going against the flow on this current cast. More than a century ago, the direction of the Chicago River was reversed to move the city's wastewater away from Lake Michigan. The river has since flowed into a canal instead and onto the Mississippi.
One of the consequences of that is that you can actually have fish swim back and forth between the Great Lakes and Mississippi River in a way that they never could in a natural environment.
That's Joel Brumeyer of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. He says, as a result, giant Asian carp could invade the lakes and change the ecosystem. Blocking off the canal and restoring the original flow of the Chicago River would reduce the threat, But first, the city must improve water quality so pollution isn't carried from the river to the lake. CurrentCast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
For 30 years, KKFI has been supported by listeners just like you. Thank you for being there for us so we can be there for you. To help sustain independent community radio, go to kkfi.org and click donate.
All right, this is Richard. I'm back again. Rachel, we were talking about the refining part. You're going to have to bring it back to me. But
sure. Talking about our dialogues, right. I was thinking about the dialogue we did in Johnson County a couple weeks ago. Rachel, if you wanted to share a little bit about some of the lessons we learned and what we're going to be doing moving forward.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, we were very grateful and fortunate to be to partner with the League of Women Voters of Johnson County to host a community dialogue on climate change and health. And we didn't really talk about CEP's, the Climate and Energy Project's approach very much, but we're a very solutions-based organization. We're pretty optimistic people, and we wanted to make sure that we were keeping the climate change conversation in a solutions-based framework to help people stay in a mind for change and progress and optimism. It's very easy, obviously, to get overwhelmed by climate change, but we wanted to try to maintain that that kind of optimistic spirit, and that we can make a difference and we can positively impact our future if we all start working together. And so we really balanced kind of an overview on what climate impacts we'll see in Kansas, what we're already seeing now, what health impacts we'll see, and also how those impacts are amplified and so much worse on vulnerable populations. And then really we talked about what we call our top 10 reasons for hope, and then ended it all with a workshop on how to start your own climate conversations. So often, you know, going up to somebody and saying, you know, why don't you believe in climate change is probably less effective than saying, you know, I hear that renewable energy is a great way that we can make our communities more resilient in the face of a changing climate. What do you think about that? So we just tried to help people find things that resonated with them so they could start sincere conversations with their neighbors to start really expanding the conversation to be a little bit more proactive and more focused on our communities.
Okay, then this before I go to the second part, I want to end this on the fact that this is a 3-year program, right?
It is.
So actually, all what we've been through is just the beginning phase, so to speak, because we got, 2 more years of this. So I just want folks out there to understand it's just been a tremendous experience, and hopefully the fruits of our labor will start showing up in the kind of work that you see coming from these various agencies and entities that are there. I know that for the NAACP, which I represented this year myself, I'm going to bring people into it going into this next year so that they can also start benefiting from it. So because that's an area that we were just talking before we came in here. There's a lot of little areas that the NAACP nationally wants to try to get into in this environmental world. And we have the foundation built here in Kansas that will probably end up becoming the example for them to use around the nation because we're already set of being able to bring folks into it. So I'm looking forward to that. Thanks, Rachel, for coming in and helping us explain this to folks. Now we're going to switch over to this other part. You still on? You still going to be on, right?
I will for just a little bit more, yes.
Okay, all right. You just let us know when you think you have to go. Dorothy, I'm going to let you take this. Explain to folks what this collaborative effort you have going on. I think, first of all, Kansas Energy, right? What we talking about?
Yeah, so the Kansas Energy Conference.
What is Kansas Energy? Is that an entity itself?
It is not. It's what the annually for, as I said, this is the 18th year that there has been a Kansas Energy Conference.
Okay.
In the early years, it was really just a wind energy conference. It was called the Kansas Wind Energy Conference. And then over the years, it has turned into the Kansas Energy Conference. And normally, it really has just been hosted by the Kansas Department of Commerce. But this year, we approached Commerce with our Clean Energy Business Council and said, hey, we've got this new group. We have some ideas. We'd really like to help with the conference. And so we worked out a deal where we're co-sponsoring the Kansas Energy Conference. It's going to be September 26th and 27th in Wichita, Kansas. And it's going to be out at the Doubletree Hotel out by the airport. We're really excited about some of the new things that we have been able to bring to the conference this year. We're going to start the day with a pre-conference wind farm tour. We're going to take a bus from the hotel and we're going to go out to see the Kingman Wind Energy Center.
Okay.
And that wind energy center is a NextEra project. NextEra is the developer, and then Westar Energy takes power from that wind farm. So we're going to go out there, and we're actually going to get to go inside of a turbine.
Are you?
Which is really exciting.
You know, I'm gonna jump in here for those of you out there listening. I mean, especially if you haven't been out in Western Kansas lately. And I know there's a lot of good folks out here listening to this, a lot of good folks in Kansas City metropolitan region that don't necessarily get out in that part of the state. I just came from out there. We had a conference in Dodge City a couple of weekends ago, and I was just totally amazed at what I saw on the road going and coming. I cannot believe how many wind turbines I saw out in that part of the state. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much they have done in them little small towns. I mean, it's just everywhere. So I had to throw that in there while she was saying it to let you know, if there's any way possible, any of you listening to this can find a way to make it down there those 2 days, I guarantee you, you will not regret it. I'm sorry.
No, that's great, Richard. It's interesting. We just finished an article for the Electricity Journal. It was a decade of renewable energy in Kansas. And when we really start digging into what's happened in the last 10 years, Kansas is got over 5,000 megawatts of wind now. And 10 years ago, we had 200. And so we really have just exploded with utility scale wind power. Now, we've got some work to do on the solar side and on the distributed wind side. We have barely scratched the surface on the Kansas side of the state line. Missouri's done a little better, but Kansas has less than 1,000 solar systems.
You're talking about from solar on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, less than 1,000 solar systems. So we're going to start the conference on Monday with a pre-conference wind farm tour. We have a few spots left, and so you can go to tinyurl.com/2017KEC to get more information and to register. You could also go to the cleanenergyforbusiness.com to get information. But that's going to be on the 25th, on Monday. Then we'll have conference sessions all day Tuesday and Wednesday. And then from noon to 5 on Wednesday, we've got another new event that we're calling a post-conference distributed generation workshop. And that's really going to talk about kind of what's happening with small-scale solar and wind power, how businesses are using it. We're going to talk a little bit about community solar. We're going to talk about ways that businesses can be engaged in the conversation about distributed generation. And we're really excited about that part of the conference as well.
So The program here I'm looking at is saying September the 26th and 27th, but that Monday is the 25th.
Yeah, we're going to – that's a pre-conference.
So what time of day will that kick off?
We're going to leave from the hotel at noon.
Okay.
And it includes a boxed lunch and some information sharing on the way to Kingman.
Right.
We'll spend a couple hours at the wind farm, see how it works. I have heard that there might actually be a couple of legislators who decide to climb a wind turbine. So if you ever wanted to see a legislator climb up 350 feet in the air, might be a good time. And then people will get to take turns going inside the turbines, which I've been to almost every wind farm in the state, and you just don't get to go inside.
That's
a pretty big deal that they're going to allow us to do that. And then we'll be back at the hotel by 4 o'clock. And then the conference itself really starts Tuesday morning at 8 a.m.
And now you were saying something about Tuesday you were going to kick off with. What were you doing Tuesday morning?
So Tuesday morning is when the whole conference kicks off.
Okay.
That's the whole event. We start registration at 7:30 in the morning, and we've got some really exciting sessions. We're really focused this year on the advanced energy economy and how things are changing. We're seeing a lot of changes in electricity generation. In the way people use energy, electricity. And so we've got two really full days where we're going to talk about kind of all parts of energy. On the first day, we're going to start with a panel that's going to have the American Wind Energy Association, and it's going to have Vote Solar, which is a solar advocacy national organization. And then we're going to have a solar company, Tradewind Renewable Energy, actually is doing utility scale solar now. And then we're going to have, EDP Renewables is going to be one of the other speakers. And they're really going to talk about lessons that the wind industry has learned over the last 10 years and how the solar industry might benefit from those. And really get some good dialogue going with those groups. Polsinelli is one of our platinum sponsors this year. Polsinelli is a Clean Energy Business Council member, and they're actually moderating that first session. So I think it's going to be a really great kickoff to the morning.
Okay. Now, one thing we didn't mention with your other partner, I know Clean Energy is there, but you have another partner.
So the Kansas Department of Commerce.
Okay. All right.
Is one of the sponsors, and then the Clean Energy Business Council is a new business organization that the Climate and Energy Project created about a year ago.
Okay.
And they are a multi-section of businesses. We have some solar companies, some wind companies, some energy efficiency companies, some manufacturers, some contractors, about 20 businesses now on board with us who are all interested in this advanced energy economy. And so the Clean Energy Business Council is partnering with the Kansas Department of Commerce for this energy conference. So in addition to talking about wind and solar, we're going to have a great transmission panel. And we're going to have folks from ITC Great Plains and Clean Line Energy Partners.
Transmission.
You know, we have all this great resource, but, you know, what's happening with the grid to make it ready to move power?
That would be, I would really like to be able to sit in that particular session. One of the reasons is that was the one thing they talked about in 2008. You know, My experience goes back to 2008, and that was the fact that it was, in fact, they said at one time that the renewable energy industry was at the same spot that the highway industry was when Eisenhower created the interstate. And that's what they thought Kansas would be the ideal place for that second generation of interstate or the grid being created. And so how is that going?
So it's really interesting. Back when we were started in 2007, there had not been a lot of transmission built, high-voltage transmission built across our region, across our state. And actually, Kansas, through the Southwest Power Pool, which is our kind of the manager of all the grid in our state and in the region, we've had over $2 billion worth of transmission investment in the last decade. And that really has enabled a lot of renewable generation.
$2 billion, did you say?
$2 billion. And the interesting part about that $2 billion is the way that transmission is planned and paid for is it's cost shared among all of the states who participate in the Southwest Power Pool. And so that $2 billion worth of transmission has been cost shared with Kansas and all the other states in the SPP. So we haven't had to foot the bill for that ourselves. We've cost shared that with other states.
That's what I was going to ask. So the state pays it?
No, the way that it works is the utilities pay it, and then we in turn pay the utilities for the transmission investments as ratepayers.
In your ratepayers. So the utilities pay it. So the grid is actually going to be owned by the utilities?
The transmission grid is actually owned by different utilities. So Westar owns some, Kansas City Power and Light owns some. Some of the co-ops own theirs. And so it's a really interesting, the way it's all connected together. Yeah, it's really interesting.
I would think that it would have been like one of those businesses that somebody with deep pockets would come into your state and they would pay for the grid being built and then lease it.
You know, in some regions, things like that happen. Now, there are a few independent transmission companies. So one of those is ITC Great Plains. Okay. And they just own transmission lines. They don't own generation. Another one is Clean Line Energy Partners. Clean Line Energy Partners is what we call a merchant transmission line. And so they build and own the transmission lines, and then they lease them basically to whoever's going to use the system. But also, utilities own transmission lines.
Yeah, when you were saying it, for some reason in my mind, I saw unions picketing a place to get some kind of increase in some price, as we do in this country, and shutting down a threatening to shut out some utilities. And I was going, you know, it might be better for the utility companies to own their line, so that they could prevent those kind of things from happening, you know.
So the transmission panel is going to be really interesting, and it's going to be lots of perspectives. It's going to be from the investor-owned utilities. Right. It's going to be from the Southwest Power Pool, and then we're going to have a co-op talking about the impact of transmission cost on their customers. We're also going to have some general sessions that talk about electric vehicles. And we're going to have some general sessions that talk or some sessions that talk about energy efficiency. You know, where does energy efficiency fit in the energy mix in this state? You know, how do we get our utilities and our corporation commission to allow the utilities to invest in energy efficiency so that we can have programs for folks to get their houses weatherized so that we can have programs for folks with aging air conditioning and heaters. You know, we really have an opportunity for energy efficiency that Kansas is just really missing out on.
Rachel, I know you're out there. I didn't want to leave you in the wind. We got a couple of minutes here before we take a break. Is there something you wanted to throw in there right quick?
You know, Richard, you must have been reading my mind, because I've got a leave this space in just a minute here, but I wanted to just remind everybody that if you're interested in energy and climate issues in Kansas and the Midwest in general, we have great resources on our website, climateandenergy.org, and if you go to that website, you can really quickly see what's going on. There's a link to the energy conference, and you can also read about our wealth work. Again, that's climateandenergy.org. We're also on Facebook at CEP Heartland, and Instagram for the same handle, CEP Heartland. We always appreciate hearing from people and having you all join the conversation. So with that, I just want to thank you again so much, Richard, for having us on and for being such an excellent partner.
Oh, thank you, Rachel. I appreciate you coming in. And I'm not for sure if Mike got those or not, so do me a favor and send those to me, and I'll make sure I get them to Mike, and we'll get them on our website, too, for people to be able to go in and check it out. We'll put it on our Facebook page, all right?
You got it. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Be safe out there.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.
Okay, we got to take a break, and we'll be back with you in a minute. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. About 100 miles east of Sacramento, California, as you drive on Highway 50, you come around a bend, and suddenly Lake Tahoe comes into view.
And this incredible blue body of water is there out in front of you, and it's just the most unexpected sight to come across in the middle of the Sierra Nevada mountains.
Jeff Schlatto directs the University of California Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center. He says visitors to Lake Tahoe often admire its crystal clear water, but the lake is losing its famous clarity. 50 years ago, you could see 100 feet down. Now, it's more like 70. One cause is silt and clay washing in from nearby development. But climate change is also a cause. As the lake warms, microscopic algae grow and reduce the water's clarity. If the water gets too warm, native fish could die off, and invasive species and harmful algae could flourish. And it's not just Tahoe either.
Lakes are warming at different rates, but almost 100% of them are warming.
Tahoe is just one crystal clear example. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
KKFI is sustained by generous listener support. Thank you for 30 years of belief in Kansas City Community Radio.
All right, we're back here now. I'm with Dorothy Barnett, the Executive Director of Clean Energy Project. Dorothy, I want to go back to the conference again before we leave. Kind of repeat the dates and for people who are just tuning in so they'll know what it is we're talking about, where it's going to be located, even maybe give some information about accommodations and stuff.
Yeah, so we're excited. Our newest project called the Clean Energy Business Council is a partner with the Kansas Department of Commerce, and we're co-hosting the 18th annual Kansas Energy Conference. It's going to be held in Wichita this year at the Hilton DoubleTree out at the Wichita Airport. You can register through Wednesday night. The whole conference has been made very affordable thanks to some really generous sponsors. You can go to cleanenergyforbusiness.com and take a look at those sponsors. But I'd like to highlight just a few. Polsinelli, energy law practice located here in Kansas City, NextEra Energy, Cromwell Solar, our folks from Cromwell, Tradewind Energy, Westar Energy, Clean Line Energy Partners, and a bunch of our new solar partners, some of them based in Kansas City, Kansas, some of them based in Kansas City, Missouri. We're just really excited to have all of the partners help make the price so affordable. Mm-hmm. You can come for a full-day conference on Tuesday and Wednesday that includes meals and great sessions. If you're a nonprofit, you can come for $90. If you're just a regular person, you can come for $100. And we even have a student rate. We'd love to see lots of students join us. So a student can come for this two-day conference for just $60. So in Wichita, we're going to kick off with a pre-conference wind farm tour where you get to actually see inside of a wind turbine on Monday, September 25th. And then the entire conference begins Tuesday, goes all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday. Included in your conference registration this year is a brand new distributed generation workshop, and it's going to go from noon to 5 on Wednesday, September 27th, there at the hotel. And that really, as I mentioned, is just going to have a great deal of information about solar and distributed wind. We're going to show some success stories. We're going to have the mayor of Greensburg there. Mayor Dixon's going to come and talk about distributed wind and solar and what they've done in Greensburg. And we're going to have a representative, and we have a Kansas representative from Mead, Boyd Orr, who has a project called Fowler Feeders. And they've done a huge solar project out there, he and his brother. So we're going to hear about that. And we're going to hear from Good Energy Solutions, from King Solar, from Cromwell, and others who are going to really talk to us about what their businesses need in terms of policies in Kansas to be able to grow and thrive. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah, that sounds like quite a lineup that you're going to have. I mean, I'm very impressed that all of these people are coming. I'm also excited to see the Kansas putting forth that kind of effort with this energy. Like I said, being on this part of the state, sometimes we have a tendency not to see it. And it's like it's going on and we don't really know about it. But it's obvious that there's a lot of conversation being generated about it. Where are our legislators? What are happening with them as far as energy is concerned?
Well, you know, we're really excited to have a really good group of legislators this year who are really interested in the advanced energy economy. We've got some senators that have really stepped up and allowed us to have some presentations last session about the Clean Energy Business Council and about this idea of energy choice. One of the things that's happening, Richard, is the energy markets are shifting and they're changing. It used to be that the main buyers of renewable energy were utilities. Mm-hmm. You know, utilities were the ones buying renewable energy. And in the last 3 to 5 years, we've really begun to see that shift where businesses, corporations, big names want renewable energy. And they want to have access to a lot of renewable energy. We've been fortunate enough to have conversations with both GM, who has a plant here, and Walmart all over the world, who really have high goals to get more renewable energy for their plants. Huh. GM has a 100% renewable energy goal. And so helping those conversations happen with the state and with utilities is a huge deal.
Yeah,
one thing to note, Richard, is Amazon. Amazon's in the news. They're looking for a second home.
Right.
I've read a bunch of articles about Kansas City being a contender for that.
Yeah.
You know, what I'd like to say to Kansas City is the thing that could tip us over the edge is if we could figure out a way to get Amazon access to cheap Kansas wind. Because Amazon has a 100% renewable energy goal.
Okay.
They're a company who cares about renewable energy. And if we can figure out how to make that happen, maybe we could be the chosen one.
Yeah, that would be nice. 50,000, they was concerned about us having enough people to fill all them jobs. But that's a lot of jobs. That would be good for us here, be good for Kansas. Well, I am very impressed. I'm glad to hear about all this going on. Like I said, my experiences go back into the 2000, I heard you say something about 2006, 7, 8, when we were doing the things that we were doing. So that's definitely a factor. So, Dorothy, we're going to let it go here. I'll let you have a final wrap-up of something you want to say, and then we will pass this on.
Well, just thank you again, everybody, for having us tonight. It's been a great pleasure, as always, and we look forward to seeing you at the Kansas Energy Conference.
All righty. Thank you now.
Everybody, this is Natural Lee. I have a couple of upcoming events for you. This Thursday, September 21st, from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., you're invited to tap into the benefits of energy efficiency and learn how to save money and be a good environmental steward at home and work during the KC Green Fair. The City of Kansas City, Missouri, will host the fair from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. this Thursday, the 21st, at City Market Square, which is located at 5th and Walnut Streets. Vendors will be exhibiting solar, insulation, heating and cooling energy, or heating and cooling energy efficiency, water efficiency, lighting and roofing products and services. Additional exhibitors include Bridging the Gap, Renovate America, the Metropolitan Energy Center, Kansas City Parks and Rec, and the KCMO Water Services. Participants can enter for prizes and get to listen to the KC Green Band and enjoy lunch at restaurants and the city market. If you'd like more information on this upcoming event, please visit kcmo.gov/KC Green. And the final event I have for this coming week is, it's called Clean It Up, Tyson, the campaign kickoff meeting. you can, let's see, you can RSVP at a link we'll have on our Eco Radio Facebook page. And it's for this Wednesday, September 20th from 7 to 8 p.m. at 607 East 31st Street in KCMO. And the description reads as follows. The people of Kansas City should know where their food is coming from and how it's being produced. We deserve drinkable water and clean rivers and lakes. Tyson can require their suppliers to abide by common sense practices such as crop rotation, keeping soil covered, and protecting natural prairies, all key steps in keeping pollution out of our waterways. So these folks are trying to encourage Tyson Foods to clean up their supply chain if they build enough public support starting here in Kansas City. So you're invited to join them on Wednesday night at 607 East 31st Street starting at 7 p.m. They'll be working with other concerned residents and local organizations to find out how to take on Tyson and plan for our sustainable future. Mike, do you have any other events?
I don't think so. I think that should just be about do it for us.
Okay, sounds good.
And the podcast for this program will be up shortly. And so please look for that, listen for that, share it, please. And please like and share Eco Radio KC's Facebook page.
Environmentalists score a big win. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
After Hurricane Harvey dumped more than 50 inches of rain in the Houston area, people were concerned about the pollutants in floodwaters.
Reporters from the New York Times were curious too, but neither the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality nor the EPA would provide any information as to what they were testing or what they found.
So the Times took on this task itself by asking the Baylor College of Medicine to put together a team to test floodwaters as people started to return to their homes.
The testing done on September 5th revealed that E. coli levels, usually from fecal contamination, were 135 times higher than what's considered safe. They also detected lead, other metals, and even liquid mercury beads, which are very dangerous.
People were also worried about what they smelled in the air, especially near a Valero Energy refinery.
The Texas Tribune reports that the EPA took measurements over several days, but has not released any specific information, simply saying that the concentrations of chemicals in the air, such as benzene, met Texas health guidelines.
Environmental groups then took on the task of testing and informing the public about the specific levels of pollutants. The results show that in numerous locations, benzene levels far exceeded what would be acceptable in California, but were under the much less stringent Texas standards.
Pollution experts said that by the time EPA started its sampling, much of the benzene would have dissipated.
However, last week the EPA demanded that Valero turn over records related to the release of benzene and other compounds. The agency also announced on Thursday that Valero significantly underestimated the amounts of chemicals that had been released during the hurricane. This is important to both countries. That's what a California state official said about the proposed agreement between Mexico and the U.S. that will hopefully head off severe water shortages along the Colorado River basin.
The agreement, dubbed Minute Number 323 to the 1944 Mexican Water Treaty, will extend provisions that reduce deliveries during shortages and increases them in wet periods.
The Desert Sun reports that Mexico will continue to store water in Lake Mead near Las Vegas, which is intended to keep the level high enough to avoid triggering dramatic cutbacks.
The present agreement is set to expire at the end of this year, and the new one will still need approval of various U.S. and state authorities. Nevertheless, a signing ceremony has been scheduled at the end of the month, both in Juarez, Mexico, and Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Environmentalists won a major victory this past week when an appellate court decided that the federal government must consider the effects of climate change when permitting land for coal mining.
In the past, the government has argued that coal leasing on federal lands will not affect climate change because the coal could simply be mined elsewhere. But the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals wasn't persuaded and told a lower court to seek more analysis from the Bureau of Land Management, which permits permits the leases.
Jeremy Nichols with Wild Earth Guardians told the Associated Press that the decision is big, and they will be using it to confront other mining approvals. His organization and the Sierra Club had sued to block leases at the two biggest mines in the U.S., both in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming.
In the meantime, mining will continue at three of the contested leases that the BLM granted to Peabody Energy and Arch Coal.
Even before a major earthquake struck Chiapas in southern Mexico about a week ago, another problem was plaguing some local townspeople. Their water was disappearing.
Truthout reports that in thousands of towns across Mexico, corporate water consumption is taking precedence over local needs.
Juan Urbano, a former local government official in Chiapas, said that to get water, some people have to walk 2 hours a day and others are forced to buy it.
Some are placing the blame on a Coca-Cola bottling plant that consumed over 1 million liters of water from wells per day in 2016. Communities near the plant are suffering water shortages.
But there are no shortages for the Coke plant, which now has two wells. Antonino Garcia of Chipango University sees a direct link between the deep wells of the bottling plant and the disappearing water for locals. Earlier this year, a United Nations representative said that there is sufficient evidence that Mexico is violating people's rights to water and sanitation in Chiapas.
And finally, octopuses are solitary creatures, thought to be loners who socialized only to mate and otherwise spent time in their rocky dens with a "do not disturb" sign out front.
Or so scientists thought until they discovered Octopolis off the eastern coast of Australia, where researchers observed 16 octopuses living together around a man-made, heavily encrusted metal object. Interesting as it was considered an anomaly.
But research out this month in the journal Marine and Freshwater Behavior and Physiology documents another encampment just a few hundred meters away from Octopolis.
Dubbed Octlantis, it has 23 dens on three patches of rocks, each surrounded by mounds of shells along with a collection of fishing lures and beer bottles. There, in this octopus's garden, the creatures live in perfect harmony.
Not. Octopuses are known to fight constantly, and Octlantis is no exception, with scientists observing the octopuses evicting each other out of homes and acting aggressively by elongating their bodies and changing color.
But that said, they are hanging out together, which the researchers find intriguing and a bit confounding.
More study will be needed, but lead author David Scheel of Alaska Pacific University told Quartz he thinks it might be a generational thing and that future offspring might evolve to be more willing to share space.
Something we might call an Occupy movement.
This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Water quality experts will present the latest science and research in the field at WQTC in Portland, November 12th through 16th. Learn more at awwa.org/WQTC. I'd ask my friend.